genuinely, I think it's a bit of both. And that's not me swerving your question. That's not me giving you a politician's answer. I think that confidence comes from within, but I also think that your confidence can be built and it can be influenced. It's malleable, right? We can mold it, but I think you do have to have a certain amount of belief in yourself.
Welcome to Helping Organisations Thrive. Today I have the pleasure of Gail Tong on the show. Good morning to you, Gail.
Morning, Julian. How? I'm really excited to be here because we've already kind of alluded to what we're going to talk about and you dropped something in and now I'm really excited to get going. So thanks for having me.
Fantastic. That's good. Well, I was on your podcast a couple of months ago and I'm sort of paying back, but I wanted your insight on something. I'm quite keen on this. I'm just going to introduce you to the audience. You are the Chief Enrichment Officer and founder of Enrichment Coaching, and you have a real focus on helping your clients with their confidence, amongst other things. And today we will be exploring confidence, but also looking at the whole aspect of imposter syndrome, what it is. Is it there? Is it real? What is it? And just explore that a little bit more. But before we get into that conversation, Gail, I'd like to ask you, what do you love about what you do?
That's a great question, isn't it? And I think for me, the thing that comes immediately to mind is about having an impact, however big or small. So you've already said, you know, I'm a coach. My background's in retail and learning and development. So I've always had this feeling about helping people to grow and to realize things that they don't know about themselves. And that's where that having an impact comes from. And I love understanding what makes people tick. People are fascinating, fascinating. And that's what I love.
They are fascinating, aren't they? And I have this wonderful privilege, probably like yourself, watching people change, develop, grow when you're coaching or working with a team. And it's just that fascination of people and what happens and how that all sort of manifests itself. It's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think a byproduct of that as well for me is reflecting on how much I've learned as well from those people, from those being privy to those conversations, you know, what I've learned about myself as well. So a byproduct of doing what I do, and I'm sure you're the same, is that you learn all the time, every day, in every session or everything you do with every client or person that you interact with.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. I think we have to be always on that sort of learning sort of a curve, don't we? Otherwise, we go backwards. I definitely think that. We're talking about confidence, and I know you have a real emphasis and focus on building people's confidence in the context of workplace. And you know, we talk about your big pants. I know you're at networking meetings and often gets shown about that.
Yeah.
I'd understand where that whether you call it a niche or a focus, has come from. Why have you particularly focused on an aspect of that confidence in the workplace? I just want to understand sort of the background to it, the backstory.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I've been asked this a few times, and the first thing that comes to mind is I came from my background in retail is obviously quite a female dominated environment generally. That's a really sweeping statement. But for those that don't know, I worked for Ann Summers for about 12 years. So that was an absolutely empowering female environment where you were empowered, confidence was a thing. So I think I have an innate confidence, right? And that probably sounds really arrogant for people that are out there going, oh, well, where does she get her confidence from? I don't have it all the time. It's not there all the time because confidence is a bit of a roller coaster. But I do have a bit of an innate self-belief. And I've always had, I believe, that a confidence thing. Now, whether that's through my upbringing and the things that I did, so I did dancing when I was younger, so I was on stage. I mean, there's a few stories there, I'm sure, that my mum could probably share with you about how one time I barged my way to the front. I mean, I'd never do that now. But I think the environment that I've been in throughout my childhood and then my career to get me to where I am now has generally always been a place of empowerment, building confidence, people having belief in me, which has then built the belief in myself. Now, that's not to say that I've not had challenges and I've not suffered from, you know, mental health issues and anxiety and burnout. But if I take a step back from that and go, God, I've learned so much, in quite an empowering environment. Now, whether that's how what I've chosen to do and how I've come by, you know, who are the businesses maybe that I've chosen to work for, the path that I've chosen, I don't know. So there's a little bit of me going, I don't really know. But there's another part of me going, I want to share this environment that I've grown and learnt with other people, because confidence is there to be had. You've just got to want to get it.
Interesting. And you talked about environment there and how you worked in an empowering environment that sort of, I guess, created or your confidence or came to the surface, and you talked about, you know, as a child, you almost sort of push yourself forward and perhaps you pushed in a context of, you know, being on the stage. What does environment play in confidence, or is confidence from within? It's almost like, is it something that's outside in or inside out?
Genuinely, I think it's a bit of both. And that's not me swerving your question. That's not me giving you a politician's answer. I think that confidence comes from within, but I also think that your confidence can be built and it can be influenced. It's malleable, right? We can mold it, but I think you do have to have a certain amount of belief in yourself, but that can be grown. So when I talk about environment, I talk about if we just rewind a little bit and we talk about confidence being like an iceberg, and at the top of that iceberg, the bit that sticks out of the water, if you like, that's our confidence. That's our outward display of our actions, of our confidence actions. And if we think about the iceberg that's underneath the water, what you've there got is you've got a bit about your upbringing, which might link into what we're going to talk when we move on to imposter syndrome. But also you've then got your environment and your experiences for me. And all of those things build up to the top, the outward display. So when we talk about environment, I include in that the physical environment that you maybe worked in, but also the people that you surround yourself with and how those people help you. They champion you, you know, they become part of your environment. It might also be what you choose to wear on a day when you're, you know, presenting in the workplace. Or I remember really early on in my coaching career, a colleague saying, I just don't feel very empowered, so I'm going to wear some red trousers. And I saw her this day in the office. I was like, those trousers look amazing on you. She's like, yeah, my meeting went really well. So she had created an environment there for her in those red trousers where she felt really empowered. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but I guess what I'm saying is that there's a part of me that says we all have confidence in ourselves. But again, we want to go out and get it. And we can do that with the things that surround us.
So this is all about, there's confidence to be had, as you said, and it's available for everybody. It's how we activate it, isn't it? How we bring it to the forefront. And interestingly, what do you think putting on the red trousers, what was it? It wasn't obviously the material. What was it, you think, psychologically? What was going on with her that she put those on the red trousers and felt more confident? What do you think was happening there? Because it'd be interesting to understand that. Because I think people listening right now may have the similar thing where they put on, you know, a smart suit or certain clothing that makes them feel comfortable and relaxed, and therefore they feel more confident as opposed to unconfident. So it'd just be interesting, that whole sort of clothing or the physical aspect of things.
Yeah, so I relate it back to my big pants thing, which I know you alluded to there. So for those that don't know about that, the big pants are the things that make you feel taller, right? They make you stand taller, they make you feel stronger, they make you feel empowered, they help you to make decisions. So I think in the case of the red trousers, I mean, red's quite a dominant colour, right? I'm not an expert on colours in terms of fashion, but what we know about red is that it's deemed to be quite a confident, dominant colour. Whether we agree with that or not is probably a conversation for another time. But I think what they did for her was they made her feel confident, because confidence is a feeling, right? So they made her feel confident. They probably made her stand taller. They probably made her feel more in control of the group. Interestingly, it was quite a mixed group, the group that she was going to. It was mixed male and female. I think there were a few men in there that maybe she felt a bit intimidated by. Maybe intimidated is a bit strong, but maybe she had some feelings of, actually, I'm not as confident around them as I could be. So these just make me stand taller. And I think this is also relatable to back when we were in the pandemic. You know, we were working from home in our joggers and our pajamas, maybe in some cases. But I know that sometimes if I just put something a bit nicer on, like my Zoom wardrobe, for example. So I had a hoodie on when I got up this morning, but I've changed into something that makes me feel a little bit more like I'm at work. I just feel different. So it's a feeling. And I think sometimes that feeling is really hard to pinpoint, isn't it? But it's a feeling that it gives you, because you probably act a bit differently. And that's the other thing about confidence is, if you want to have more confidence, a lot of people go, oh, I just fake it till I make it. I completely do not agree with that, because that's just not sustainable. But I think you can act as if you are confident. So if we think about an actor in a play or our favorite soap star, for example, they practice and practice and practice until they become that person. And then they're believable. They don't fake it. They can't. Somebody in a soap that's been in there for about a million years can't possibly fake that, can they? But they become believable. So it's about this practice piece, practice, practice, practice all the time.
Mm. And is it almost like setting intentions, isn't it? Like, you know, if you wake up in the morning and say to yourself, I'm going to have a really bad day today, your system will collect evidence to qualify that, basically, and say you will have a bad day and you'll find all the things that are wrong in your day. Do you think, like, putting on the red trousers, you're setting an intention, this makes me feel confident? Because feeling comes from a thought, doesn't it? A thought happens first. So my intention is, I want to feel confident, therefore I put these on, or I do this, or I, whatever you say, do, act, however it is, you're setting an intention, and therefore then you sort of will, hopefully, confirmation bias will go, yes.
There's your action,
and then starts to happen, doesn't it? That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and then there's your behavior. Yeah.
Yes, and that's how it all starts. But it stems from that thought, isn't it? And I think it's important how we capture our thoughts and what we do with our thoughts, because our, as we know, thought life is basically what will tell our story. That's a narrative, isn't it? And, you know, we got to be really careful with what we think, how we think. Because we can think our way into something, out of something, down into something, up on something, a whole host of stuff. And we're not even moved, done anything.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think as well, when we come on to talk about imposter syndrome, you know, sometimes the 3 a.m. the 3 a.m. thinking is the worst thinking in the world, isn't it? Because we're alone with our thoughts all day, aren't we? Unless we share those, generally we're alone a lot of the time with our thoughts, and they become bigger, or if we allow them to.
Absolutely. And I often challenge a lot of my clients with their thoughts. We all make things up, you know, that they'll come up with stuff. Oh, the so-and-so thinks this. And I say, do you know that? How do you know that? And they go, well, I don't. So are you making things up again? And I think we do make up things in our heads for some bizarre reason. And it's to fill that void of unknowing. So we want to put a knowing thing in the gap. Going on to imposter syndrome, it'd be good to understand from your perspective, and I don't like the word imposter syndrome, but I know it's because it sounds like it's a disease and everything else, that you're already feeling what I'm thinking of this anyway. So what was your thoughts on it? How would you define it? And I guess what's your experience, whether that's personally or through people you've sort of coached?
So I think we could probably talk for hours and hours about imposter syndrome and what we think. I said to you before we went live that imposter syndrome comes up a lot in relation to confidence, but I want to be clear that actually imposter syndrome is not about a lack of confidence. And I'll come on to explain that a little bit. But I think that imposter syndrome is a thing. And I think I don't talk about it a lot. So you probably won't see me talk about imposter syndrome a lot on my social in relation to confidence, because there are a lot of people out there talking about imposter syndrome. But I have done quite a bit of research because it's something that really, really interests me. And it does come up with my clients as well. And I don't think I have imposter syndrome, but I do think there are certain triggers that give me a feeling of imposter syndrome. But when we talk about it, some of the research that I've done, I mean, it started in the 1970s, actually, with some research by, I think there were two female people. They were, you have to check, fact check me on this, but they were called Clance and Imes, and they called it a phenomenon. I find that really hard to say without going phenomenon, but they called it a phenomenon rather than this syndrome word. And they did some research on female postgraduates who all felt like they were postgraduates because they'd done it by luck, and that they, you know, that it was a fluke, that they were just there. And then there was a couple of other pieces of research over time in terms of exploring this further and what this looked like. And generally, it came back to say, I've just got it up on my other screen. I'm just going to read it because it's easier. An internal experience of intellectual phoniness that those who feel fraudulent and worthlessness have, despite of outstanding academic or professional accomplishment. So for me, there's this piece around, it doesn't matter what you've done or what your achievements are, what your experience are, what qualifications you've got. Imposter syndrome, if that's what we're going to call it, is this absolute feeling that you're going to be found out as a fraud. And that it's, when you are found out, it's going to go horribly, horribly wrong. So I think there's a big difference between what confidence is and what imposter syndrome is. But I also think that the term imposter syndrome has become really trendy. And I think you hear people say, I've got imposter syndrome, when actually I don't genuinely think they have. That would be my honest view.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, and the fact that it's labeled a syndrome sounds very, it's like you've caught this disease and then you're always going to have it. And unfortunately, that creates a narrative in itself that makes you think, oh, I've got it. Oh, no. And that I'm always going to have it. And then therefore, it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in some ways, and a narrative that you and that's what I don't like about it. I interestingly, I've in my head decided, and I've made a decision for it because of reframing imposter syndrome, and I've reframed it as a positive. And I talk this a lot with my clients. When you're in a feeling of, when you're growing as an individual and you get, no cliche, outside your comfort zone, but that's where growth happens, when you feel slightly unsure, potentially feel a bit of a fake, feel a bit of a phony. I'm in a place of, you know, either in a place of whether you're in a network of people or you're on a stage, whatever the situation is, you feel sense of, I'm not entirely sure here, I feel slightly uncomfortable with this. And that's when sometimes imposter syndrome hits people. And I say to people, the reframe on that is that sign is telling you you're in a place of growth because you're feeling uncomfortable. And that's the reframe. So it's just a reframe saying, actually, okay, that's fine. I'm feeling uncomfortable. I don't feel great. But because I'm outside my comfort zone, therefore I'm growing. And therefore that's just my body telling me, that's okay, that's fine. And that's how I reframe it. And so it becomes a positive indication that you're in growth, as opposed to use it as a narrative to send you into a spiral of negativity and knock your confidence even more. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I think if we were to just say, from the research that I've done, right, I'm not claiming to be any kind of expert here on imposter syndrome. There are experts out there that have done research. And actually, one of the people that I follow is Claire Yosa. She's on LinkedIn. She's done more recent research on imposter syndrome. Her book's great as well. So maybe we can include that somewhere in the comments, because if you are experiencing imposter syndrome, she's got some great ways of managing it. But she did some research in 2019, and she interviewed loads of people across a wide range of spectrum, from people that were self-employed to people that were employed. And she said imposter syndrome happens when there is a mismatch between who you see yourself as currently being and who you think you need to be to achieve what you want to, despite the evidence that you're more than capable. So it was really similar to that original research. But what I've taken from that is that confidence, if we take confidence as something, which is probably kind of what you're describing when you talk about, and maybe on a stage and I'm about to talk to people and suddenly I'm telling myself I've got imposter syndrome. Actually, you're right. I think for me, you don't have imposter syndrome. You are in that state of growth. It's uncomfortable. You're out of your comfort zone. It's not something you would normally do. And I think that comes back to confidence, which is about what we think and believe we can and cannot do. For me, imposter syndrome is about who we are and not what we do. So there's lots of links for me, but I think imposter syndrome is much deeper, at a deeper identity level, where probably there's some talk about it being linked to this idea of conditional worth. And that can come from anywhere. So, you know, worth as a person depending on what we do or don't do. And I need to always want to be right. So I think that your reframing activity works, and I think it definitely works in the confidence situation. It will work in an imposter syndrome situation as well, but it will take much longer because that person will be stood on that stage probably thinking, somebody's going to come on this stage and pull me off as a complete fraud. That person won't be able to immediately go, like you or I might be able to stand there and go, right, Gail, it's okay. Pull up your big pants. You've got this. You can do this. A person that's running what is sometimes known as imposter syndrome scripts will be thinking, somebody's going to jump out of the audience and pull me off the stage because I'm a fraud and I shouldn't be here. And that for me is the difference.
That's interesting. And it's from the research. Was there any, I know the original research was done on sort of females, wasn't it? Is there a difference between female and male in terms of experiencing imposter syndrome?
I think it's a mix. And I think the research has shown that something like 70% of all high achievers, so all high achievers in the workplace, will experience imposter syndrome at some point. I think probably what it's a sweeping generalization again is, I would think women will probably talk about it more than men. Although I think that's changing. I think that's starting to change. I think I'm hearing a lot of men now say, I've got those feelings of imposter syndrome. And again, you and I might then question, is it imposter syndrome or are we talking about a confidence thing here?
Yeah, but also just in some ways, labeling something becomes more difficult. Anyway, once you start labeling something, you've then created this sort of anchor in your life that now is what you're wedded to, unfortunately. And sometimes we just need to smash some of those little anchors out of our brains, narratives, which is causing us difficulties.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point as well, right, about these labels, because I think that sometimes these labels, particularly in the workplace, can bring about some of these imposter syndrome feelings, if we're talking about true imposter syndrome. So in the workplace, you're given a title, aren't you? A role, you know, I was learning and development partner. Well, that comes with a whole load of expectations and responsibility and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that society expectation on that label, that role, is the same as what we think imposter syndrome is doing for us. It's all about thoughts. We're back to where we started, about our thoughts.
Yeah, that's the whole thing of I found through my coaching, is it's all about the thoughts. Anything is about the thought, because a thought then creates emotion, and emotion creates a behavior and action, and then it becomes who you are, destiny type of thing. And that sounds very sort of cliche and twee, but that's how our brain works, how it all works, and the thoughts you create. And so if somebody's thinking they're experiencing this imposter syndrome, whether it's true or not, they're experiencing it. That's who they are. Where they're at. What are sort of things that can help them deal with that and overcome that, and therefore walk and sort of shake it off, so to speak?
So I think it depends when and where and how much they're experiencing imposter syndrome. So if we're talking about true imposter syndrome, this real feeling that you're going to be found out as a fraud, there can be lots of things associated with that, from anxiety right through to burnout, because we're always thinking that we're going to be found out. So that might mean that we, you know, we people please. We're always thinking about comparison. And I know we will do some of this in our normal life, but I think your reframing exercise will help somebody in a coaching session to say, okay, let's think about how we might reframe that. What might that look like? And you and I might find in a coaching session, that change might happen quite quickly because someone will go, oh yeah, you're right. That story that I'm telling myself is actually not true. Someone with imposter syndrome will take much longer. So I think that if people think they've got true imposter syndrome, I think seeking help is probably the most important thing. And people watching or listening to this might go, yeah, well, you're going to say that because you're a coach, but I might not be the right person. A coach might not be the right person to help you. You might want to work with somebody who specializes in imposter syndrome. You might want to work with a coach. You might want to work with a therapist. But I think the first step is around increasing your awareness, which will then reduce the anxiety that you have because you're confused about why you're feeling when you've got these imposter syndrome feelings. But I think the key thing there is that if you choose to seek help and you choose to work with somebody, there will need to be absolute trust in that relationship because you want the person that's going to be able to help you to not have any opinions about you, to not be biased. You know, what do we call it? Unconditional positive regard. I've probably got those switched around, but you don't want them to give you any opinion. So a friend won't be able to help you with imposter syndrome, whereas a friend might be able to help you to reframe something. And I think don't expect these changes to happen overnight. It will need to be gradual exposure. So in a reframing with somebody who's running imposter syndrome or has got imposter syndrome, whether that's what we want to call it or not, they're always going to be thinking about mistakes. So for you to say, go and give something a go, they're going to be like, well, hang on, but I'm going to fail and then I'm going to be found out as a fraud. We're back to that again. So, and that's kind of where it goes. So these changes will be small and it will be gradual. And so one of the things that I've read is like, if somebody's got a real phobia of, you know, spiders, for example, the exposure to overcome that is slow and it's gradual and it works at their pace. I think if that feels like a step too far for you to go and seek help with a professional, because that's probably what we're talking about, then do some proper research, but don't Google it. Don't go down the Googling route. Find somebody who's done some research, who is a trusted author on this. So I've mentioned Clayo, so there are lots of other people out there. And I think that if you can challenge yourself to be honest with yourself, there will be some things in that will resonate with you that you can then start to take action yourself with.
Yeah, that's really good advice, I think. And I think that sort of almost signposting as opposed to just here's five tips to do it. It's more about signposting and exploring, as you say, and getting the right advice and the right intervention to help people in that context, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think like we said at the beginning, people are fascinating, right? But people are also, everybody's different. So what will work for me won't work for you. And I think that's why it's important that you find the right person to work with and you go at your pace. You seek out what you think is going to work for you. And often, I think some of the research suggests that imposter syndrome can't be changed through positive affirmations or mantras because it runs much, much deeper.
No, that's interesting. And just going back to the workplace a context in terms of confidence, and just a final question, really, what things can leaders do? We talked about environment right at the start. What can they do in the context of their teams, their organizations to help promote or help activate confidence in their people more by creating the right environment? What sort of things can they do?
I think leaders can. One of the things for me is around communication and being open and honest. And I think this is about really clear communication and giving colleagues, employees, whatever we're calling them, the space to share their ideas, to give their opinions without any kind of fear. Because I think when you are an employee, there is a certain fear that if I say this is going to be career limiting, or I'm going to get the sack. That's the worst case scenario, isn't it? And I think leaders can take a real step back from that and go, right, how would I want to be treated? How would I deal with my people? How would I want to be listened to? And how might I then create that environment for the people in my team? And I think let's be clear with people. Let's not pussyfoot around them. Let's not be cruel, but let's have clear and Brené Brown talks about clear is kind. Let's have really clear conversations with our people. And if they need feedback, give them feedback, but do it in a clear and honest way. Don't leave them floundering, because that's then what affects their confidence, right? Because then they go, oh, well, they don't believe in me. They don't. You know, that they, well, I'm not going to say that again, because what's the point? Because they just pushed me down. So I think leaders have a responsibility, I think, to create an environment where their colleagues can practice their confidence without fear of being put down or, you know, sacked in the worst case scenario.
Almost creating that psychologically safe environment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's that place where the people can fail, they can challenge, they can learn, they can contribute and feel it's okay and they're not going to be sacked or career limiting, which is unfortunate. Yeah.
And I guess probably I will pipe down in a second, but I guess that back to your original point about where did my confidence come from, that's probably what I was allowed to do. I was allowed to make those mistakes. I was challenged. Not without, you know, it's dramas and that kind of thing, but I was allowed to go off and do that, Gail, and see what happens. And that was how I learned.
And I think it, as much as we, environment is an external thing, but it has an impact and a place in helping people activate that confidence or activating them to thrive and to flourish in an organization. I really appreciate all your insights, Gail. It's been really interesting conversation, and particularly about imposter syndrome. If people want to get in touch with you or connect with you, what's the best way of doing that?
So you can go to my website, enrichmentcoaching.co.uk. And obviously I'm on LinkedIn as Gail Tong. You will find me there.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you like this episode, then please rate, review and share it with your friends and colleagues. As a coaching practice, I coach high-performing leaders and teams with extreme ambitions, and it will help you go beyond what you believe is possible. If this sounds like you, then let's have a conversation. You can contact me at julianrobertsconsulting.com.